Hey, it's NPR's Book of the Day. I'm Andrew Limbong. I've been on a horror reading kick lately, and a note I made in the margins of one of my books the other day was, is horror the most self-referential genre? A lot of contemporary horror seems to be aware of the tropes of the genre, and is either leaning into them or reacting against them. And this is true for the two books we're going to talk about today. In a bit, a short story collection that toys with the idea of the so-called final girl, which if you're not a horror head and don't know what that is, do not worry, we will explain it when we get to it. But first, NPR's Aisha Roscoe talks to Jeanette Winterson, author of the collection The Night Side of the River, about how to make a ghost story in the age of the smartphone. That's ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BritBox, streaming acclaimed original series you won't find anywhere else. With powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey, Matthew McFadyen, and more. Streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
A door creak, a chill wind. Maybe a thump, thump, thump upstairs. All signs you've been visited by a ghost. But for author Jeanette Winterson, a ghost can send a ping to your phone or visit you in the metaverse. She's written a new collection of ghost stories, one that spans all sorts of genres, The Night Side of the River. And the author of Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit in Frankenstein joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Why do you think we are drawn to ghost stories, not only in fiction, but like in our lives?
All humans want to do is break down every barrier. That's been our great success story. But death is the hard boundary. It's the barrier that everybody on this planet will meet at some point in their life, no matter how wealthy they are, no matter who they are, no matter what their achievements. You know, that's coming for them. And human beings long to believe that there might be something on the other side of that. And you know what? Even the most skeptical of us, when we lose a loved one, we really want there to be something on the other side.
Mm, yeah, and you deal with that in the book with one partner who just wants some sign of their loved one. And I, at the end of that, I wrote, it's a very sweet love story.
Oh, I'm glad you like that one. Yeah, a lot of people have a like, it's a pair of hinged stories. So that they both sit side by side. And as you say, the first story is from the point of view of the person who is bereaved. And the second story is from the point of view of the ghost, the dead person, who is desperately trying to give that sign that we all want to see. But somehow it never quite happens. In these stories, maybe it does. I mean, we play with the idea of is it all in someone's imagination or is it not?
Mm. You write that ghost stories are often set in the past. I mean, obviously, ghosts are from the past.
Yeah, that's why it's their favorite place.
Yes, exactly. But many of these stories are kind of set in the present or almost like a future world technology-wise. Why do that?
One of the interesting things now at the time that we're living in is as artificial intelligence, computational power starts to offer us different ways of being alive, it also starts to offer us different ways of thinking about death. And I realize that, you know, just as you can get that crazy app which will scrape your social media and then you can get texts and messages from your dead loved one or you can put them into your photo album even though they've already gone. I was thinking this is offering all kinds of new possibilities for the ghost story. But if we are going to have apps that allow us to contact our dead loved ones, and if we were in the metaverse as our avatars, our digital twins, meeting other folks like us, but also with programs who are going to be our hosts and so on, how would we know if there were ghosts who had infiltrated that space? It seems to me like a perfect space for ghosts.
There's a great line in the book. It's on page 54. If you could just read that.
I feel sure that by manufacturing disembodied worlds, worlds of our own, and that's what we mean by a metaverse, it's a location, let's not call it a place, a location where we exist only in avatar form and where our minds enter a reality not dependent on the material world, then As we do that, we have unexpectedly created an opportunity for the dead.
And that was like, I had never thought of that. Because it's kind of like being a ghost.
Yeah, they don't have bodily form. So it's going to be perfect if we create places, spaces where we are all running around not in bodily form. Why wouldn't they come to join us?
Yes, and how would we even know? They could say they're a program or something.
We wouldn't know. That's the crazy thing about it. And it's also crazy, that if you go in there with your friend or your partner, your loved one, your family, whatever, and somebody in that group dies, you can keep them going in the metaverse as their avatar. I think that's weird.
Yeah, I think it's weird too, but I thought you brought up the idea that maybe sometimes it's better to leave the dead dead.
Yes, I mean, yes.
And I'm doing this transition here, but you talk about your own experiences with ghosts. And so I wondered, why decide to include those anecdotes?
There's 13 ghost stories. There had to be 13, didn't there? Because it's a spooky number. But I like to play with the form. I thought, well, why not break in as myself and talk about things that have happened to me that I can't explain away? So I was showing that I've got some skin in the game here, that these things have been part of my reality and I don't understand it. And simply I have to live with it. And, we're in a world now that's always looking for easy answers, quick-fire solutions. Nobody likes to say, I don't know. And this is a book about saying, I don't know. And when it comes to the supernatural, I think that's the most honest answer.
And so you, in the book, you have this kind of charming way of dealing with ghosts. And you're, I don't know if you still live in this home, but it's in a home that you lived in. And you would just, you greet them pleasantly and just ask them that they behave well and don't involve you. Now, I would not react that way to ghosts. Like, I love ghost stories, but if I can't, I would not be like, just behave well. I would be like, I'd be going crazy. I'd be running around.
Well, when it first started happening, I do still have this house. It's a very old house. It was built in the 1780s, so it's seen a lot of life, and so it's not perhaps surprising that some of that life is still hanging around in a different form. And to start with, I used to get, first I was frightened, then I was cross, and then I thought, what can I do about this? Maybe I should start talking to them, and then they won't just sit down on the bed in the middle of the night, or turn the radio on in the kitchen, which is really irritating because I hate being woken up. And since I've started talking to them, it's been really much more civilized.
Have you thought about what would you do as a ghost?
Well, I might come back to my own house and I might kick out those tenants that have been there for so long.
Who've been hanging out for so long.
Yeah, I think by then it'll be fair, because I'll be a ghost as well. And they can just move on because I'll have it back to myself.
Yes. That's Jeanette Winterson. Her new collection of ghostly short stories and other essays is called The Night Side of the River. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me in spookiness.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Sun and Ski Sports. They're celebrating National Bike Month in May with a big giveaway. Enter in-store to win a Cannondale Trail mountain bike or online to win a Haro Flightline 1 mountain bike. Cycling isn't just transportation. It's a boost for physical and mental health. Join them for Bike to Work Week from May 13th to 19th. Make every ride count this National Bike Month. Gear up at Sun and Ski Sports, where adventure begins. Visit sunandski.com.
Like I said, horror as a genre loves to comment on itself. NPR's Juana Summers recently had this conversation with Cerecia Fennell and Desiree Evans about their collection titled The Black Girl Survives in This One. And they had this discussion about, they both grew up reading fun horror stuff, like Goosebumps as a kid. But black history and black horror are interlocked in a really serious way.
In a horror story, there's this idea of the final girl, the character who, with both pluck and luck, outwits the supernatural monstrosity and emerges as our victorious protagonist at the end. The thing is, for the many black people who love horror,
generally, the final girl is usually white. usually white, usually battered, but like is coming out on top feeling very triumphant. I think everyone probably remembers, you know, Sydney, that's like the famous final girl from Scream.
This is the moment when the supposedly dead killer comes back to life for one last scare.
Not in my movie.
But so often seeing Black women outside of the kind of roles as a kind of a stock character who dies, or kind of the sassy best friend who's very supportive to the white female final girl lead, we were very rare.
Desiree Evans and Ceresia Fennell both grew up reading horror stories like the Goosebumps books and would watch horror movies with their older siblings. And they would note every time there was a Black character, whether or not it was a forgettable part or a substantial one, like Sanaa Lathan's character in Alien vs. Predator.
Unexpected things are going to happen. When they do, no one tries to be a hero. Understood? Understood?
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Now, Desiree Evans and Ceresia Fennell have teamed up to curate and edit a new book. It's an anthology, a collection of 15 horror stories from Black writers, including themselves, with the representation they've always longed for. It has a self-explanatory title. The Black Girl Survives in This One. And as Evans explains, it's geared to a young adult audience.
Horror has always been a big genre in middle grade and young adult fiction. Kids like to be scared. Kids like to kind of face their fears of the world vicariously through books or through movies, as Ceresia and I did growing up when we were watching the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, these movies that scared us. And when there were final girls in all of these movies that we were rooting for, but again, they were always white girls. And so now this opportunity to introduce teens of color, girls of color, to a world where they can root for the girls who look like them, who might come from shared experiences as them, and to see them survive and come out and be able to vicariously experience that. That teenage is the place so many of us fell in love with reading, and so many of us came into this world wanting to see ourselves on the page.
One thing I noticed while reading is that a number of these stories do address race explicitly, things like stereotypes and racism and microaggressions. For either of you, can you think of a story where you think that works particularly well?
I'm going to say Justina's, definitely. Black Pride by Justina Ireland is about a group of friends who get together and, you know, one of them is about to go off to college. They go to hang out at sort of like a little cabin slash house, and some spooky things start to happen. I don't want to give too much away, but by the end of the story, the main character sort of has to make a choice. Is she going to join and team up with this particular group that is sort of fighting some racism in interesting ways? Or is she going to decide to not join? What about you, Desiree? Do you have any that come to mind?
Yeah. One of the ones that I really love, and I think we ended in the collection with it, is Fox Hunt by Charlotte Nicole Davis. We have a girl who's new to a school, kind of getting used to some of the kind of local traditions. And one of them is a game that is going to be played that people have been talking about as she begins the school year. But then you find out that, well, this game is not, it's requiring a bit more survival than she thought going in. But it kind of tackles this kind of sense of hypervigilance a lot of Black girls and Black women feel on the daily.
It feels to me like even just a couple of years ago, we might not have been sitting here, three Black women, discussing an anthology horror series that centers us. I'm curious, and Ceresia, I want to start with you here. What do you think has happened lately that allows an anthology like this to get made?
Wow, I'm gonna tap into my publishing background and remind folks of all of the things that happened on social media and really within the world, right? Within 2020, people were out on the streets protesting. There was a lot of stuff happening in the real world. And then that kind of also made people within the arts kind of look inward and see like, oh, where is the representation for Black and brown people? And so things like the hashtag publishing paid me, movements like We Need Diverse Books, there was just like a pressure point on publishing. Like, we see you and we see that you're not telling our stories and you really need to, you need to pay attention. And then I think also we got all of these wonderful horror movies from the mind of Jordan Peele, right? And then the fabulous Tanana Reeve Du was teaching all of these horror classes that also kind of went viral when she posted about her syllabus. And of course, Jordan Peele like popping into her class. So I think it's, you know, the perfect time for this anthology to be coming out. Like you said, there's so much diversity here. There's so much different type of horror that could be tapped into. There is room on the shelf for more of these stories to be told, because I think a lot of people will think, oh, there's already that one Black horror story. I don't think we have room for anything else. And it's like, no, here's a collection that proves that there is diversity within that. And so we really do need to continue to tell these stories.
There is this really pervasive stereotype that horror is simply a white man's genre. It's for the Stephen Kings and the Alfred Hitchcocks of the world, and not for Black folks. And this book, among others, proves that that is very much not the case. It has 16 Black authors. Why do the two of you think that horror resonates so much with so many Black people?
I think it's complicated and not. You know, Tanana Reeve Du, who does the introduction to our anthology, is known for saying Black history is Black horror, right? You know, we've always been there and we've always loved horror, even if horror hasn't loved us, even if we were kind of, you know, used as a symbol of the other or the monstrous that had to be killed, right? Early on, a lot of 40s and 50s horror, or later on, we were the first to die or the magical Negro, these kind of side trope characters that were only there to uplift the story of the white female heroine or the white protagonist. We were always there, but we were there in ways that were not conducive to allowing us to tell the story, us to be the heroine, us to be the protagonist. My older siblings and I would get together on the weekend and watch horror movies because it was a safe place to experience our fears. You know, horror becomes this place that we can live vicariously through, that we can see people survive in ways that allow us to feel like we can survive what's happening to us in the real world.
I completely agree with everything that Desiree said. The real world is crappy to Black people. Like, to live in this world is to navigate racism, sexism, like all of the isms all at once. And I feel like being a Black writer and telling these stories and spinning something where I'm like, oh, okay, this Black girl is going to go through all these things. But then at the end, she survives. We continue to survive no matter what is thrown at us.
That's Ceresia Fennell and Desiree Evans. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Their new collection is called The Black Girl Survives in This One.
That's it for this week on NPR's Book of the Day. Let us know what you think. You can write to us at bookoftheday@npr.org. I'm Andrew Limbong. The podcast is produced by Isabel Gomez Sarmiento and Ashley Montgomery and edited by Megan Sullivan. Our founding editor is Petra Mayer. Show elements for this week were produced and edited by Julie Deppenbrock, Majd Al-Wahidi, Todd Munt, Emiko Tamagawa, Monty Karana, Devin Schwartz, Rena Advani, Alana Pearl, Barry Cordimer, Lucy Perkins, Ed McNulty, Danny Hensel, Brianna Scott, and Patrick Jaron-Watanon. Beth Donovan is our managing editor. Thanks for listening.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
This message comes from NPR sponsor MassMutual. The Financial Educators Council says 39% of Americans don't have someone to go to for financial advice, but you can plan for the short and long term with someone backed by 170 years of financial expertise at massmutual.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.